Shalom Aleichem, Chevra, it's Binyamin Hammer at National Council on Israel. We welcome Rebbe for conference call number 62. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Question one. As mentioned in the previous call, our community has the minhag of no music during the Sfira. And yet the night of Lag BaOmer, there's a communal hilula for live music and dancing around the fire. A, is this justified? B, may one listen to music at night, not at the hilula? C, is shaving allowed at night? The Mishnah Berurah paskens in Siman Tov Tzadi Gimel, Sif Kotan Yud Aleph. Some say it's permissible to take a haircut and shave the night of Lag BaOmer. The Shulchan Aruch Rav Sifei explains, this opinion maintains that the students of Rabbi Akiva ended the death, they stopped dying on the 32nd day of the Omer, which happens to be today. And the proof is that we don't say Tachnun at Mincha, which is what the Mishnah Berurah says in Sivkot and Tess, which we followed that minute here in the yeshiva a few minutes ago. And the Mishnah Berurah writes that, well, we don't find that people get married the night of Lag BaOmer. I happen to be invited to a wedding tonight, night of Lag BaOmer. Many years ago, Rabbi Alpert Zatzal, a Rebbe in our yeshiva, made a wedding the night of Lag BaOmer. So apparently we find that too. And it makes sense. The Mishnah Berurah writes in Sivkot and Hay that weddings and haircuts are equivalent. On this basis, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying that even Rikudim of Rishus, just people dancing for no particular reason, is permissible the night of Lag BaOmer, and that seems to be the custom. There are many who consider the dancing around the fire to be Rishus, and some even consider it to be worse than Rishus. Perhaps we'll get to a little bit later. And this is the minhag is a minhag. Now let's remember that Sfira is all minhagim. There's no strict halachic requirement for anything. So if something depends upon the minhag, you follow the minhag. Minhagim can change here and there. Right now, the minhag is common to get married tonight, to have a hilula tonight, and therefore, I may be in favor of the former and not so much in favor of the latter, but nonetheless, the minhag is there and may be followed. As far as music, going back again, if you look in the Sefer Devar Yehoshua, by Yehoshua Ehrenberg, Chela Gimel Simon Samuel Gimel, he says, I believe correctly, there's no prohibition of music whatsoever in Sfira, in the 3 weeks. You know, he doesn't see it. There's no. You just look in the classical sources. It's not there. The only time it may be a prohibition is music which will lead to dancing. And that's the correct original version of the minhag. It's true in certain places the minhag has included not having live music, which is all they had until not that long ago. Then the minhag spread to include not having any recorded music, which again didn't exist that long, a little while ago. And in those places where they have this extension of the minhag, one should not go against the minhag hamakom. That's the truth. But nonetheless, the fundamental minhag never included a prohibition against listening to music. If the custom is in that place and people will notice that you're going against the custom, you may not do so. But the night of Lag BaOmer, since there's a custom to have music, so the person can hear the music wherever he wants, it's not being perceived as going against the custom. C, shaving. In my opinion, it's a dispute, as we said earlier, it's better to be strict, even though ironically, the people are lenient to get married, to have a hilula, but those things, marriages, it's hard to find a good date to get married, and Lag BaOmer is an excellent date. Hilula only applies at night of Lag BaOmer, but shaving, there's nothing wrong to wait till the morning, unless it's an important need. Maybe if you're going to a wedding, and you want to look better for the wedding, it'll be okay to shave at night. But generally speaking, there's no particular reason. I would say it's better to wait until the morning. Question two. Before he counted Omer, someone said to a friend, what are you doing tonight? You know tonight is Lag BaOmer. May still count later that night with a bracha. B. If someone is nervous that he might mistakenly say the number of the Omer, may he, or should he, count earlier in the night well before he davens at the late Ma'ariv. Well, I saw in the Dirsha Mishnah Brura, in that same this is Siman Tav Pei Tes, in footnote number 56, he quotes that the Kaf HaChayim, the Or LeZion, and Rav Eliyashiv all say you certainly did not fulfill the mitzvah by saying tonight is Lag BaOmer, because you're only referring to a particular day, not a count. It's just the name of the day is Lag BaOmer. And therefore, they all paskin, you can count afterwards with a bracha. And Rav Eliyashiv said if you did not count later, you lose it. You can't continue the next day to count with a bracha. Because you said tonight is Lag BaOmer, doesn't mean anything. And I think that's the correct psak. As far as the nervous Nelly, look, remember that is a problem. Remind yourself not to say the day of the Omer. And if it's impossible, and you're just so nervous, you have no peace of mind, and you have pain, then it's permissible to count as soon as the Zman begins, before Ma'ariv. But just make sure you don't make a different mistake and count with the bracha again after Ma'ariv. That's another possible mistake. So I don't recommend this practice, but if someone who has no peace of mind without it, he may count now and daven Ma'ariv much later. Question 3. Regarding making early Shabbos, there are 7 separate questions. We'll try to take them one at a time. What about arranging a mincha ma'ariv on the plag of the Mogen Avraham? The plag of the Mogen Avraham is fundamentally using the calendar of the Rabbeinu Tam. You count the days from Alos HaShachar until Teis HaKochavim. And the plag of the Mogen Avraham, the Pashtus, is not very long before the Shkia. So arranging the plag of the Mogen Avraham doesn't help at all, because even if you didn't want to follow the Mogen Avraham, you just wait a few more minutes and have the Ma'ariv, instead of beginning at the Mogen Avraham of the plag of the Mogen Avraham, let it begin at Shkia, which is a short time later. Then there are some Rabbanim who have different calculations of the plag of the Mogen Avraham, which I don't agree to in the first place, but on that basis, they start Ma'ariv a little bit earlier. My view is someone who doesn't follow Rabbeinu Tam completely, forget about it. There's not even a chance you should rely upon this. Even if you do, people usually do it only the Chumra. It's not a valid option in my opinion. We should stick to the plug that we have, which is an hour and a quarter before sunset, which is, of course, calculated in a relative sense. And in the summertime, it's usually closer to an hour and a half in New York City. B. May one daven early and then stay in shul while his wife continues to do malach at home, also on his behalf, until regular lighting time. The Mishnah Brura, the Piskei Tshuvos in Siman Reish Samach Gimel Sivkot Lam Zayin says the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Brura are silent on this matter, implying that you may do so, and the minig is to be lenient, even though there are serious gedolim who disagree. It seems to me that the lenient view is a more correct view, that every individual is a separate person. There's discussion of the master of the house having mastery over the members of the family, his wife and children, and they're duty-bound to follow his early acceptance of Shabbos. That doesn't resonate. It's not with me. And even Rav Moshe, who is somewhat inclined in that direction, says, it's only true if the master of the house is accepting Shabbos out of religious reasons, but not what we call for in our days the religion of convenience, which is what most people do nowadays. If they have, they want to go to sleep earlier or eat earlier, or they have young children, they do it in that way. And I'm not opposed to that. For all the years that my children were young, we always took in the early Shabbos before Plag HaMincha. But Rav Moshe says in that kind of a case, it would not be binding on the members of the family. And therefore, the bottom line is, I think it's not binding. They can continue to do their malacha, even for him, until the regular time. C. May his wife light candles early, and yet his daughters continue to do malacha in the house, blow drying hair, putting on makeup. The answer is the same. The answer is yes. Here, it's a bit of a bigger problem, because it's a contradiction in the house itself. In the previous case, the husband's in shul, and the other family's at home. Here the wife is at home and the daughters continue the melacha now, so it's a little unseemly that there should be a split in the house itself. As a matter of fact, in the good old years when we davened early all the time, we'd come home from shul, my wife hadn't lit candles yet, we wouldn't come into the house. We'd wait outside, and we would, you know, just knock softly, and after my wife lit candles, it could have taken a few minutes longer, she then opened the door, we came in. It's a little bit unseemly. Our case is more profound because we already finished davening Marav and are still doing malacha in the house. That's more unseemly. But even here, if the wife lit candles early and the daughter is still doing things in the house, it's not so nice. But on the other hand, if the wife lights candles in the dining room and they're still preparing in their own private bedrooms or bathrooms, which is a little far away, then I think it would be okay. D. Is there a time one may not start a Suda because of the time of saying Kriya Shema Bezmano has come? If it's come already for sure, Lecha Tchila, should say Kriya Shema first. But even half an hour before that, which is approximately the Shkia here in New York, you should not begin the meal. Should not begin the meal. There are those who are lenient since you already said Shema in Shul. It's a tough leniency because it seems to me that the Shema and Shul you are not Yotze. Now it is true that Rabbi Natan said you can fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema from Plag HaMinchan on, it's Tosfos and Daf Beis and Brachos. My view is that's Rabbi Natan L'shitoso. As I mentioned earlier, his Plag HaMinchan is only a few minutes, 3-4 minutes before the Shkia. That can be arguably what we call Zman Shchiva. But an hour and a half before the Shki or thereabouts, I don't think that could be called Zman Shchiva, and therefore this leniency is somewhat suspect. But maybe the leniency applies in any event, as long as you davened already, even if you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Shema proper. Some say that nowadays, when we're talking about Sfira, and Sfira, which no one counted before, as our practice, and so we don't count Sfira when you have a Plag HaMincha Minyan. If I'm right, there's no fundamental distinction between Kriya Shema and Sfira. In any event, if you dive in the right time, Mincha before Plag and Marav immediately thereafter, in almost all cases, you will begin the meal before Shkia. If over an hour, as a rule, between the time you finish Marav and the time the sun sets, it should be a long enough time to at least begin your Seuda. E. Must one eat bread or mazonos after nightfall? If yes, how much and exactly when? The Mishnah Berurah discusses this, Reish Tam of Zion Sivkot and Hay, the previous Sivkot. Some achloikas about this. Lechatchila, he wants to be strict. To have a kezayis after Tetzah Kochavim. Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying, Shemir Shabbos Perek Nundala Ha'or Kuf Lamed Ches, a kezayis is enough, even though you normally require a kebetzah lechatchila for a Suda Shabbos. But this kezayis is not a separate kezayis. It's a kezayis as part of the meal, and therefore it's considered to be a kvius. In my opinion, if that's correct, we take it one step further and say that cake or cookies at the end of the meal would also be considered a kvius, and it's part of the meal. And therefore, the cake, people usually don't have chal at the end of the meal. They have cookies very often. That would suffice. You have a kezayis of cookies at the end of the meal. You know, it's possible, b'kistin, and normally the brach would be a mizonos. Could be in this case the bracha would have been a hamotzi. We already made a hamotzi, that's the whole point. And therefore, it might satisfy the chumah, the geshita, of having kazayas after tzeis ha-kochavim. Not everyone agrees with this whole approach. This approach would also obviate a need to make a bracha on cookies or cake at the end of the meal, which I think is another svara why we should not make such a bracha. I don't make such a bracha. But there's a Rashba about it. A lot of poskim discuss it, but for this chumrah, I think it would suffice. F. If you start eating behet and need to stop mid-meal when the zman of Kriya Shema comes, the answer is no. The answer is found in Hilchos Sukkah in Siman Tov Resh Nun Bei Sif Bei in the Ramah, because the primary source is a Mishnah in the Gemara Masechta Sukkah, the third end of the third parak, that if you hiskel behet, you can continue. G, if he need not stop because he started beheter, when he finished his meal and is ready to bench, What is the proper order to do the following, counting Omer, benching, and saying Kriya Shema? I believe, this happened to us all the time in all those years, that benching is a continuation of the meal, and just as he doesn't have to stop eating, doesn't have to stop until he finishes benching. And therefore, that's what I think, is just bench first. Once you bench first, the order is fairly obvious. Next is Kriya Shema, for two reasons, Todah V'Shena, Todah, Todah Kodem, and Kriya Shema is D'oraisa, and Sphere, according to most authorities, is Midrabbanan. The Shakasari has a different approach to all this, and Simon Chof Aleph and Chof Beis, but I think that the minig is to follow this order. Again, benching, Kriya Shema, and Sphere. Okay, question number four. May a woman spray dry shampoo into her hair on Shabbos or Yantar to remove grease. I saw that some want to prohibit because of molid. Now, molid means a change of state. I believe the change of state means a full change. There are three states, solid, liquid, and gas. A full change from one to the other is a violation of molid. I don't think that's encountered in our situation. Not the aerosol can itself, which is taking some kind of a, perhaps it may have some substance which is somewhat, has some viscosity to it, and you're making it into a liquid. I don't think that's a problem because it's not a full change of state, nor is there a problem when you use a dry shampoo to remove grease, because again, the grease is grease. It's not exactly solid or liquid, and if it's removed by converting it to solid or liquid, I do not believe it's a violation of molid. I do feel that you have to be careful because sometimes when you use dry shampoo, you want to subsequently either comb or brush your hair. That's a serious problem on Shabbos. So, but dry shampoo, which does not require any combing or brushing afterwards, should be no problem. B, a woman spray static art on her clothing on Shabbos or Yantar so it should not cling to her. There is some scent in the spray. I believe it's permissible in and of itself. I don't believe it's a fragrance, a pleasant scent. And even if there is something which some of you might consider to be pleasant, my understanding is it's used purely for the reason of preventing the garments from clinging to her. And worst case scenario, it's a psikration lo nichle by the rabbonot, which we feel is mutter lahalacha. Five. May one warm up on Shabbos a chocolate souffle by placing it on a hot plate. The solid chocolate inside the cake becomes runny when it gets warm. Is this a bishul or molid issue? Again, if it becomes a total liquid, there's a problem of molid, but runny might be just a little bit liquidy, but still not a full liquid. In that case, it would not be a problem of molded. As far as bishul, we have a rule, ein bishul, achar bishul. I'm assuming that this souffle, the ingredients were either cooked or baked completely. And therefore, if that assumption is correct, you have to be careful to make sure it's correct, then there's no prohibition. Number six, a single girl regularly davens daily shachas and mincha, and musaf when applicable. She woke up late and did not daven musaf. It's now later in the day, and she wants to daven mincha and musaf. Which should she daven first? Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Reish Pei Vav Siv Dalet that mincha comes before because toder v'she'enu toder, toder kodem. And therefore, if she wants to daven them both right now, that's the implication of the question. She now wants to daven mincha and musaf one after the other immediately. She has to have mincha first. However, if she's willing to wait, then the post can say, you daven musaf now, and 2 hours later you can daven mincha. You don't take Todah Kodem if they're being fulfilled at totally different points in time. Question seven. In what situation may one employ a shinui to do malacha for a chol on Shabbos? How much of a deviation from the norm is required for something to constitute a shinui? Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Shin Chav Chesif Yizayim, a chol Hashem Basakona, Shinu is matter only in Issa Derabbanan, as the Mishnah Berurah writes in Sifkotan Nun Dalet. However, many authorities disagree, including the Shulchan Aruch HaRav there, the Ekle Tal, and the Malach of Tochem, where he discusses Refuah, and the Shemir Shabbos Kilkasa, Perek Lamed Gimel Ha'ara, Yud Ches Kotev Shlem Azalan, is Megil when there is impossible to be done to a Nachri. So if you can do it to a Nachri, you should do it that way. But if it's impossible to do it to a Nachri, there's no Nachri around, you should do it yourself, even in the Doraisa Kalachayav, which is a simple read of many Rishonim. Even though the Mechaber seems to not accept that. Shinui, the word Shinui is really, the real word is Kalachayad. Kalachayad, Shalokatera, Chamalocha, has to be something significant. Has to be recognizable. This is not the normal way to do it. Obviously, every single situation is different. Someone has to press a button. You normally press a button with your index finger. People don't press buttons with the back of their knuckles. So you press with the back of your knuckle. That's considered a very significant Shinui. No one ever does it that way. And even though there's no change in the result, some authorities want a change in the result, not just the change in the action. The consensus view is that that's not required. Any change in the action of significance, even though it's not a change in the result, would suffice to be considered a shinui. Question number 8. Recently, an announcement was posted in various places regarding people who got a mortgage from a company called Quicken Loans. Basically, it's a privately held mortgage company and the owners are Jewish. Ahead, the risk is not issued with the loans. The question is, what should be done if someone already has a mortgage from them? 2, does it make a difference if they sold the original mortgage to a different company who now holds the mortgage? 3, is there a way to do ahead the risk of a zoch and other shlobofona? The schus for the owners not to violate loss of ribbons, but ahead the risk can be done without them being party to it. And 4, any other pointers or things that we should know about this issue? It's a very serious issue. Very serious issue. It's a shaila of a ribis d'oraisa. I use the word a shaila because we pay in checks. You receive money in checks and pay in checks. According to some authorities, a check is considered to be ein gufo mamon, which according to some is not ribis d'oraisa. But it's at least a shaila of a ribis d'oraisa for 2 reasons. Some say there's a d'oraisa even if it's not gufo mamon. And some consider a check a gufo mamon. It's just you're telling the bank to give them cash. Whatever. That's a big dispute which we cannot resolve at the present time. In any event, it's a shaila of a d'oraisa. And the only way out is to pay up the mortgage immediately. Take out a different mortgage from a different company. Maybe if enough from Jews do that, they'll change their policy. They've been approached many times to do a hefty risk, and they refuse. They adamantly refuse. I'm not the one to start campaigns, but if everyone who is Shomer Mitzvahs will just cancel their mortgages as quick loan and go to different companies, and it's certainly proactively go to different companies, then I think it may have an impact. Maybe. It may cost you money to cancel the mortgage for 2 reasons. There may be a certain penalty clause, and maybe they're the cheapest group around, but AFLPK, halacha is a halacha. Even if they sold it to a guy, it's not at all simple that they are completely out of the picture. They may still have some kind of measure of responsibility if you don't pay up, etc. And therefore, I don't think there is a heter if they sold it to a guy. It's hard to know if they sold it to a guy. And Zochin will not work because they have screamed and yelled, we refuse to do it. You don't apply Zochin if the person refuses to do it as a general rule. And therefore, there is no way out that I know about at the present time to solve this problem. Question 9. Regarding Sfiras Omer, 1, how many minutes should one might have to Shkia before counting? 2, according to most rabbinic authorities, counting the Omer is rabbinic in nature, not the base of Mikdash. If this is true, why do so many shuls and rabbis wait a longer amount of time to count than they wait to say Kriyat Shema, which is Zoraisa? 2 good questions. The first, strictly speaking, you can count Sfira as soon as the sun sets. It's called Ben HaShmashas. Shulchan Aruch writes so in Siman Tov Pei Tesef Beis. The Medaktik can wait till Tesef Kachavim. The Mishnah Berurah explains in Sifkot Yudalos for the very reason was mentioned. Bein Hashmash is a Sufek, and Sfeika Doraisa is Lekul. Sfeika Derabonin, excuse me. Sfeika Derabonin, according to most. Sfeika Derabonin is Lekula. Just. We try not to get involved in such questions. That's why the Medaktik can wait until Seis is also one opinion that Sfira is Doraisa. That's the way, so ideally you should wait until Seis. What's Seis? For this purpose, in New York, it's enough to wait about a half an hour or so after the Shkia. That is the time of the stars can be seen if you remove the artificial light and the smog from the atmosphere, as has been demonstrated in summer camps. About a half an hour after the sunset, you can see three stars, even without a scientific background. Just look and you'll find them. So for purposes of sphere, which strictly speaking you can do as soon as the sun sets, I think waiting a half an hour would suffice. Nonetheless, the longer you wait, the better. So for example, in my shul on Friday night, even though normally we count sphere before Aleinu, which is the normal way to count, in shul Friday night, so when we finish the Kaddish Deskabel, so we first make Kiddush, and then we say Aleinu, and then we have a Kaddish, and then we have Yigdal, and after all that, Sphira is recited. So it could be 4 or 5 minutes later, and this would make it just a little bit later, which is a little bit better. As far as why we say Shema earlier, a very simple reason. You say Shema earlier, you can say Shema again. No harm, no foul. As we mentioned before, Friday night we will say Kriya Shema more than an hour before the sun even sets. No problem. You go home, say it again. And shul, they make an announcement. Remember to go home and say Kriya Shema. And therefore, there's no question of bracha levatala, because the brachas of we call brachas Kriya Shema are not brachas mitzvah. And therefore, there's nothing, no problem. And that's why in many shuls they'll say Shema right away, and they won't say Sfira. For example, in my shul, all week long they daven Shema right after the Shkia. And of course they say Shema. And people who are medactic will say the Shema when they get home, all the three parashas as they should. But they don't count Sfira. Even though you could, I guess you have a shul of medactikim, and they want to wait till Tetzach HaChavim. I hope they don't forget. We go further. Question number 10. What is the idea of having a shomer shomeres on the day of the wedding? When does this apply? As soon as the chasen kala wake up in the morning, if they are in a place with other people, so they still need a shomer. Well, Shulchan Aruch, Eben Ezra, Siman Sam Magdal, Sifafa says you need a shmira chasen v'kala after you're married. So Gemara and Brachos have Nundalat and Medbeis. And presumably they can watch each other. That's why they shouldn't go out by themselves if they can avoid it. They shouldn't. That's after the marriage. Before the marriage, there's no such thing. Nonetheless, in the Sefer Nitei Gavriel, in two places, the fourth parak and the ninth parak, he quotes that although this is a strict halacha, in many places there is a minig to have a shomer the day of the wedding. In some places, even a minig to have a shomer from the time of the ofruf, the Shabbos before. Ironically, the source of the Bikur Yaakov by the Oroch Haner in Siman Tov Reish Tamach Tesef Katan Gimel, the discussion of a chosen on Yom Tov, but you can't get married on Yom Tov. So how can it be a chosen on Yom Tov? He's talking about the case of so he's not married yet. So the Oroch Haner says in Bikur Yaakov, well, he had his Ofruf before. It's an unusual source. And I don't think the Oroch Haner dreamt that it would be quoted to require a shomer from the Shabbos of the Ofruf until the wedding. But it is quoted there. If those who want to have that chumrah, fine. It's not necessary. Make it within. Of course, you know, you should be cautious. Day of the wedding, you should, you know, take extra care to be careful, which makes sense all the time, but especially on a day such as that. Question number 11. A woman realized during Ben HaShemoshes that the smoke detector in the kitchen doesn't have batteries in it. A, can she ask a non-Jew to put in batteries? B, or if there's no non-Jew in the area to ask, if the entire block is firm, can she ask the child? C, is not having a smoke detector considered a danger that would permit Chilul Shabbos? You know, we all grew up without smoke detectors. Now that we have them, we should have them. But it's considered to be an immediate danger if this for one more day there's no smoke detector, which is functioning. It's hard to justify that. I don't think you should be Mechallel Shabbos at all to put in the batteries in a smoke detector. Nonetheless, having said that, if you discover it Ben HaShemoshes and you have a non-Jew, so if you're too nervous, you're not going to be one of Onik Shabbos. It's a mitzvah to have Onik Shabbos. You'll have to ask a goy to do Melacha Ben HaShemoshes, as we know, for a mitzvah Torah Shabbos, and if the woman considers it to be enough of a summer Shabbos, that she can find a guy, she may do so as long as it's still Ben Hashmashes. Again, till about a half an hour after the sun sets. Otherwise, she should wait till after Shabbos and hopefully remember after Shabbos to do it. The people knew him. They went for a week without it, and all of a sudden on Friday, Ben Hashmashes, they remember. So if it was so dangerous, it was dangerous the previous week too. So it indicates that the level of danger is not that high. Question 12. Is a Rav or other person dealing with community matters is busy doing Tzorchei Tzir with Mrs. Mincha, does he need to do Tashlumin? So, there are two Mishnah Brewers. In one, in Simen Tzadi Gil, Mishnah Brewer Sivkotin Ches, he says, a person is also giving Tzorchei Tzir is Potter, no need to do Tashlumin. That's the initial answer. But upon reflection, there's another Mishnah Brewer, in Simen Ayin Aleph, and this is Cotton Dalad, where he writes, that's only true if he was an Osi B'Tzorchei Tzibah from the very beginning of his Zman HaTfilah. But if once the Chiyuv took effect on the person, then he is obligated to do Tashlumin, even if somewhere in the middle he became involved in Tzorchei Tzibah and could not daven until the Zman ended. It's in most cases that are being described over here, the Rav or someone else is busy doing Tzorchei Tzibah, Mrs. Mincha, I'd have to venture that in most of those cases, the overwhelming majority, when Mincha Gedola began, 12:30, 1:30, so many hours before the sun sets, it's hard to imagine it was such a big osik with Tzorchei Tzibah that it wasn't 5 minutes from Tadavin Mincha somewhere in between. In most cases, he probably hasn't even started it when the Mincha Gedola sets in. So therefore, it seems to me that in most cases, Lemaisa, Lemaisa, he would probably have to do Tashlumin for that reason. Question number 13. A family would like to make early Shabbos and attend a Plag Minyan, meaning Mincha will be before Plag HaMincha and Shkabo Shabbos will be immediately after Plag HaMincha. What should they, in most cases the mother, do by candle lighting if she wants to be at Mincha? Must she go home after Mincha before the Mekabel Shabbos? May she just light it before Plag? May she light candles before going to shul and make a bracha when she gets home? I'm sorry to say that the last two options don't exist. You may not light before Plag. It's too early. May you light before Plag and make a bracha after Plag? Also may not be done. The only option is that she has to go home after Mincha before the Mekabel Shabbos, light there, and come back. Now, there is an option to make a tanai, a condition, and not be a Mekabel Shabbos, so she can, let's say the shul is far from her house, she can go to shul for Mincha, go back home, light her candles with a condition, not to be a Mekabel Shabbos, and drive back to shul. That's a possibility. Not everyone agrees with that. Some think if it's too early, too far before Shkia, an hour before Shkia, it does not apply, but I don't agree. Because today, lighting candles by definition is Shabbos dick. In the olden days, they had candles for sure, not nikur, to be Shabbos candles. Today, we use electric bulbs. Every candle is obvious for Shabbos purposes. So I think that you can do that, drive back and forth if necessary. Question 14. Are there any other yahrzeit that are considered hilulas? Why is Moshe Rabbeinu's yahrzeit considered a sad day, but Rav Shimon bar Yochai a happy one? This already is a complicated question. There are those who distinguish between in Kabbalah, Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah Shebichsav and Rav Shimon Choy's Torah Shebalpeh. And for some reason, when one passes away, it's sad, the other one is happy. Don't understand that. The more likely reason is there's a source in Kabbalistic literature. Rav Shimon ben Yochai promised that he will be Mail its tov for all of Klal Yisrael on his yahrzeit. Right? How this promise happened, where it's located, again, it's not my field of expertise. And he promises to save us from any bad problem, from any problem in the world. No, if that promise is given and people take it seriously, we understand why they're so happy in Lag BaOmer. They received the promise on this day. Rav Shimon bar Yochai is up there in Shemayim. And he's taking care of all of our needs and get rid of all our problems. If someone really believes that, then they want to make a party to celebrate that. I can understand it. I mean, you know, this is not the way I was brought up. The people now go to Uman, because Rav Nachman of Uman is quoted as saying, if you come to his kever, so then he'll take care of you. Nope. I guess there are a lot of people who are into that. That's what they're doing. Many of us were not brought up that way. We scratch our heads and we see these phenomena. But, you know, the people who are doing it, we love all members of Klal Yisrael. And if they have, you know, firmly ensconced in these beliefs, which have Kabbalistic sources, either classic Kabbalistic sources or we'll call them more modern Kabbalistic sources, then they follow their beliefs. And we should consider it laudatory when a person follows beliefs, even if you may have slightly different ones. So you should make sure to follow your beliefs. Next question. What is the significance of breaking a plate by the Tanoim? The common practice is the two mothers to break it together. What if the Chosma Kal is an orphan? Who should break the plate? Well, the Mishnah Berurah quotes in Siman Tov Kuf Samach of Cotton Tess that the reason that we break a plate at the Tanoim is to remember the Churban Yerushalayim. The same reason we break a glass under the chuppah. And therefore, that's a legitimate reason. There's all kinds of things why you break a glass under the chuppah and a plate at the Tanoim. The Vilna Gaon is quoted as saying, well, a marriage which is not working out can be dissolved, just as a glass can be repaired. But Tanoim can never be broken. They quote from the Gaon, although it's hard to accept this nowadays, that there was a Tanoim which involves a Cherim and a Shvuah and a Knas. You're better off getting married and divorced immediately than breaking the Tanoim. Nowadays, most of us in our world, we don't have this kind of a firm Tanoim. The Tanoim that we have, first of all, most of them make the Tanoim at the wedding. So you break a plate at the wedding. At the wedding, and then no one's going to back out after that. Rav Moshe eviscerated the Tanoim. They don't really say anything. But even those who make Tanoim earlier on, generally speaking, don't have the full language in their Shtar Tanoim, which indicates the Cherem and the Shvuah, which would make it more appropriate to get married and divorced. So nowadays, I don't think people do that. Probably that's a good development. But again, that's the reason, and some people complain when when they break the plate of Yom Mazel Tov, but they complain the same when they break the glass of Yom Mazel Tov. So I guess, you know, it should be a muted Mazel Tov because the breaking of the plate as well as the glass is to remember the Churban of Yerushalayim. Two mothers traditionally do it, that is correct. If one mother has passed away, the most logical thing to do is have a different female family member, or if that's impossible, close friend, to stand in and break the plate. Question number 16. Regarding the prohibition of Shtari Adyotas on Shabbos, guidelines what will be permitted regarding reading material and what would not be. For example, for quick reading of the Shmir Shabbos Kilkasa would seem that most of the Jewish newspapers / magazines would not be permitted for Shabbos reading. Certainly the captions on pictures, ads, and the recipe section, as well as other stories and articles. How do we balance the idea that people will read other things that they may not be Shtariotas, but may be prohibited for other reasons, Lashon Hara, priestess, etc., and the reading that would things that would be Shtariotas would at least are more in line with Torah Hashkafa? I don't know. I looked at the Shmir Shabbos Kilkasa. I didn't see such a strict opinion. I looked at Perek Chav Tes, Ha'ara Kuf Tes Zayin to Chavdal in the newest edition. He writes, the Rav Shlomo Zalman is even Mekel, and what would be probably the most problematic question, which is the recipe section, because the recipe section tells you how to cook and how to bake. He says, well, you know, they're only teaching you what ingredients to put in. They're not teaching you how to put on the fire. And therefore, there may not be a problem whatsoever. I don't know. Sometimes they have it put the fire 350 degrees. I don't know if that fact is really true. But in any event, Rav Shlomo Zalman has certain leniencies even with the recipe section. Now, the ads, you're right. Ads are absolutely prohibited. An ad about buying something, about selling something, about employment is absolutely prohibited. It's like Mekach u'Memkar, which is found in the Shmir Shabbos Kolchasa in the same general place. But I don't see a problem with reading or pictures or their captions, I don't see a problem. So too stories and articles, I don't see a problem. If I don't find the need to answer the very difficult question, which is it better to violate Shtori Adotus, which is a technical violation, or to open a person up to Lashon Hara and Pritzus, based on an initial act, which is not a technical violation, I don't see as much of a violation in the first place. And therefore, as long as you avoid the business ads and employment ads, I believe that there's no issue of Shtori Hadyotos. Rav Yashiv quoted in the latest edition of Shmir Shabbos as even Mekel on what would be the more prevalent violation of looking at lists of invitees or of menus. He says nowadays people don't erase them anymore. That's not found in the earlier editions. So we have to try to look for leniencies in Shtori Hadyotos as much as we can, reading the street signs, the way you're walking, Poskim HaMekel there too. And at the same time, reading newspapers and magazines that have no positive Torah Hashkafa, I think should be certainly avoided. Spend the time on Torah learning. If you're not a Torah scholar, then you can read some of these nice magazines, have Torah articles, inspirational stories and biographies, and Musar and Hashkafa. That's true. And if there's some story there, an article there, which is not firmly in that category, I still believe it's not Shtori Hadyotos. But some of the problems of these things have so many ads. Some of these magazines, you come, you open it on Yontif, there are 25 pages of ads before you get to the first page. And you're not supposed to look at those ads on Yontif. So you should really maybe make a bookmark before Yontif where the actual stories and articles begin, to avoid, and then skip over the ads as best you can. Question 17, and final question. The shul has a 48-hour fundraiser with a large match challenge. The Baruch Hashem met the challenge and surpassed it. When the Gaboyim went to collect from the challenger himself, he apologized and said he cannot meet that promise at this time, perhaps next year. Is the Baal HaBayis mechuyav to pay his verbal commitment within the time frame? If he cannot or does not, must the Gaboyim Rav tell the other donators that the match challenge was not met, and therefore they are not obligated to give their pledge? It seems that the original challenger, the Balabas, is required to pay at the time that it was understood he would pay. It's called Nidreit Staka. We take Nidreit Staka very, very seriously. And he should therefore be told, listen, mister, if we made an understanding that you'd be paying within a certain amount of time, if that was the understanding of the challenge grant, et cetera, you are obligated to do so. You have to take out a loan and do so. On the other hand, if no one was told by what time the challenger would donate the money, then he wants to pay next year. He'll say, I'll pay next year for sure. There's no need to tell them. You give your $100,000 now, and the challenger will give next year the $100,000, because it was never publicized exactly by what time he would give it. Obviously, he said he'll give it in 50 years. That's ridiculous. But if it's within a reasonable amount of time, who says that all the donors are going to pay their pledges exactly on time either? So there's a certain decent interval which can be allowed unless they were told to the contrary. But if the guy's backing out completely and saying, you know, hey, I can't keep my commitment, maybe next year, you know, that's always dangerous, maybe next year, maybe not, then it seems that nonetheless, perhaps the other people have to give their donation because they were going to give it anyway. Most people are aware of the fact many of these challenge grants are somewhat of a sham. They have somebody going to give the money anyway, with or without the additional donors, and they just dress it up as a challenge grant to get additional people to give the money at a particular time. So most people are not so taken in by this, and they want to give the money. They'll give the money anyway. It's a good psychological lift. Your dollar becomes $4, and I'm not opposed to it. It's a good gimmick. It works. I'm not opposed. But would the average person say, I only gave $10 because I thought it would come to $40, otherwise I wouldn't have given it? I would hope that the average person would give the money anyway. Nonetheless, since we cannot be sure, I think it is appropriate to notify the donors, especially if it's a larger sum, that it's true that we said If you give $1,000, it's going to turn to $5,000. But we're sorry to say that the other individual who's going to give the extra $1,000 or $4,000, or the individuals are unable to meet their commitment, and we would hope that you would still be willing to maintain your commitment. If he says no, the answer is no. Okay, have a good day, everyone. A happy Lag BaOmer.
Thank you, Rebbe. We appreciate it. Yes, good Lag BaOmer to everyone, and hopefully we can call him Rebbe in the future again. Thank you. Take care.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.